Is that a word?
Innovative.
Innovative?
Innovative. Whatever. You can say it both ways. A friend wouldn't make fun of somebody like for knowing a word. See, this is what I'm talking about, people. Kristen Bride does not believe in friendship. I don't allow them to compliment me back because I can't take a compliment.
I like your beard.
Shut up. I'm leaving right now.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin. Welcome to Tuesday's show, August 29th. And when there's a billing error, when someone screws up in the accounting office, who's on the hook? Is it the fact that the company or the school, or maybe the IRS has screwed up, or if you, the person who did not screw up but still owes money, who's responsible for the error? Not the A-I-R, the E-R-R-O-R. Did I say error?
Error.
That's like rural. So I have a hard time saying rural sometimes.
I live in the rural area.
Greg Bach, before I go deeper into the story that this question is associated with, on its surface, what say you?
It's never my fault.
It's never your fault. No, I don't. It's not about fault, but it's like you owe X amount of money.
Yes.
But when you're billed originally, they bill you for a certain amount, and then they come back later and say, oh, sorry, we screwed up. We didn't bill you for enough. You owe us X amount of money.
I mean, at the end of the day, like, I guess maybe I'm old enough to know that, one, if I've spent the money and they explain themselves, I'm like, all right, I mean, yeah, I'll pay you. I'm going to end up paying you because that's just what it's going to happen. But also, I'm gonna be like, grrr, you know, and ask for, like, well, can you help me out here? Can you, I don't know. Like, I'm going to end up paying.
You're going to, well, I mean, you probably have to, right? Because it goes to collections. There's something that happens. Yeah. But I bring this up because locally, at least locally in Wisconsin, UW Oshkosh billing error leads to nearly an $8,000 surprise for recent graduates. And there's a small group of University of Wisconsin Oshkosh. This was for their executive MBA program. They're claiming they shouldn't have to repay more than $55,000 in total charges they received months after graduation due to a campus billing error. The university says the former students should have known they were undercharged and it's obligated to collect. And so my question, 844-967-2789, is, and not just in this situation, but this happens in salary sometimes. This happens, you know, I got a refund. I think I got $400 back from the IRS because they had made some mistake, or maybe I had made a mistake. But, you know, like sometimes accounting errors happen. And I wonder who you think is responsible. 844-967-2789. That's 844-96-PARTY. Like, because I had, this was back when I was managing a team, and we were in a scenario where there was a guy on my team. I had not hired him. He was one of the guys I inherited. And he wasn't very good at his job.
Ted, you're not good at your job.
He was one of those, the great combo of, you're not necessarily, because it's a sales job, right? But the team I managed when I was working in tech yeah, was the team that kind of sits between marketing and sales. So they're following up on leads that come in. They're outbounding, cold calling, cold emailing, trying to set meetings up for account executives. So he was not very good at like hitting his meeting number, basically. But he was also like precocious and entitled. And so it was a really bad combo in general.
Oh, I love that.
But before I had been hired, there was an accounting error where he was getting overpaid and he didn't say anything. And I don't know, I forgot how much he was being overpaid, but it was enough that, and over a long enough period of time, that he had like owed the company, let's say, $4,000.
Yeah.
And he ended up getting let go because he was precocious, entitled, and not very good at his job. And there was kind of this question of how does the company, because he was basically on a payment, like a payback plan to the company where there was like certain amounts, even though, again, the companies like made the billionaire and was overpaying him. But then to try to make it right, since he wasn't making enough to just pay back $4,000 in one go, he is like $400 per paycheck or something. But he would still had like half of it left when he let go. And I think the company just ate it.
Yeah.
Because there was like, we don't know how else to like, how, you know, and I don't know the legal ramifications for that. But it happens, right? It happens in with salary. It happens apparently with tuition. And is it ever right that like if your accounting team screws up, you got to eat it?
I mean, when it comes to school, the question I have is the university comes and says, well, they should have known. What do you mean? You think a 22-year-old is looking at their loan statement going, well,
they're graduate students. So they're not 22-year-olds. They're somewhere 22 to 40, right? Or yeah. I mean, people, executive MBA programs are all ages.
I guess to me, it's like you're expecting them to be financial wizards to be able to look at the paperwork and say, oh, this doesn't make sense. I should be paying more. Especially on a loan spread over how many years, that's going to be not a lot of money. You know, like it's going to be the difference of not a lot of money. So they're not going to, I just don't understand how you can expect these individuals to see it. And then someone go, I'm sorry, I'm not paying you enough.
Well, and especially because you think about it, I was having this conversation with one of our colleagues who lives in Madison as far as like, I think like our insurance. And so since we're spread all over the state, with our civic media health insurance and like different rates and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And because it's just taken out of your paycheck, you know, what I actually take home versus, you know, 401k, health insurance, taxes. It's like, I don't know. Like, yeah. I think I a lot of times, at least I'm probably guilty of like just trusting the numbers.
Yeah.
Versus I'm not someone who leaves. I'm learning now just to even like check the receipt at a restaurant before we leave to make sure we didn't get charged for something. Mike is very good at that, but I am not. So it's like, I'm certainly a trust the numbers person. And if there was an accounting error, I would not be the one to catch it.
Are you the type, or you or Mike the type, if say like you go out and get like, you each get two drinks and they forget to charge for one, you're like, you forgot to charge us. Or do you say, no, this is for us?
Well, again,
we win.
I'm not the one who's checking the receipt.
I'm saying if you and Mike go out and he checks the receipt, do either one of you say anything?
He might. He's a pretty fair, because he's like a really good tipper.
Yeah.
And so he might actually, but he'll also say, you charged us for this. Like, we weren't supposed to be charged for this.
Oh, that's not even a question.
Yeah.
You charged me for fries and I didn't order fries. No.
He was very adamant. Granted, it was early on our pregnancy, we had gone to a very nice restaurant and he got the wine pairing.
Ooh.
I obviously did not because I couldn't enjoy it. I got like one glass of wine. And, but they charged us for two wine pairings. And by the end, he was like convinced they had done that to like swindle us. And I was like, I'm pretty sure it was just a mistake.
Falling down this conspiratorial rabbit hole. Just, and you know what's, you know what else? You know, this place is being run by lizard people. And their kitchen's in the hollow earth.
But I am interested in this because I kind of, you know, and the truth is, in this specific instance with UW Oshkosh, UW Oshkosh is also broke. So, like, they need the money back. But basically, a little bit more detail and color for this situation. Stuart Cusick and seven other others graduated from UW Oshkosh's Executive Master of Business Administration in January. They graduated in January. On June 1st, they started to receive letters saying that they were undercharged during their final term and owed the university $7,903. Stewart said that he and six graduates in his cohort were told the same thing. And this is the quote. We're not students anymore, he said. I paid for this with student loan money. I'm not a student. I can't get a student loan for this.
Yeah.
And which is true. But, and he also made the point, he's like, I went here to study business. This is not how a business would act. If they've already sent us like the Because not only that, but before graduating, he said that his online accounts showed that he had a negative credit balance of $3,700. And so he shared the emails from a campus financial aid director stating he had a zero balance. So, like, everything showed that he should be fine. Mm-hmm. And so when you start to budget, you're obviously not budgeting for another, like, $8,000 to be able to pay back. If yeah. Because, again, you trust the system. You're like, I trust what you're telling me.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is I guess the problem with this whole discussion, it's so nuanced that, yeah, you're right. There are layers of responsibility that were broken here, and people didn't do their job correctly, and the students shouldn't be punished for the fact that the people charging the money didn't do it correctly. But let's face it, they're gonna end up paying one way or the other. I mean, that's just how it's gonna be. They're not gonna forgive. I mean, that's a lot of money to forgive.
Especially times 7 or 8.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, you're talking a lot of money. And
well, and also, should it matter at all that if you just finish an executive MBA program, executive MBA programs, you likely already have a job because most of those are part time. If I'm correct,
yeah,
part time programs for people who are already in the workforce. Versus, like, you're taking 2 years off and doing, like, a grad program on campus, like, that kind of MBA program. So, like, guys should have a job. And they did offer an option for a 6-month repayment plan. Otherwise, they could pay the whole thing by July 10th.
Well, the thing is though, you say, like, all right, you're going to give me a 6-month. Say this. When I'm done paying my school loans off, then I'll pay you off. Because what you're doing now is you, for 6 months, are charging me a double school loan.
Probably even more because
and just because you have a MBA doesn't mean you can't afford that either.
That's true. All right. Well, we would love to hear your opinion either on this specific instance or in general. When there is a billionaire, like if you got overpaid by your company, are you responsible for paying back that money or is that their fault? 844-967-2789. That's 844-96-PARTY. Let us know your thoughts. Give us a text. Give us a call. And then later on at the bottom of the hour, it's Tuesday at 10:30. So we're going to recombobulate with Dan Schaefer. Stick around.
Yeah, baby.
This is Ask Us Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. He is Greg Bach. And we're kicking around the question of who's on the hook when there's a billionaire. Because in WPR covered this. I think Journal Sentinel covered this too. The University of Wisconsin Oshkosh had a little bit of a billionaire with 8 of their graduates from their executive MBA program. And one of whom went to, you know, wanted to get some press about this. And it just, I thought this was interesting because I think this happens more often than you think. Not just at schools and for, you know, paying tuition, but bills. Like if the utility company is charging you something wrong and then they come back and say, hey, sorry, we were undercharging you. You now owe us $8,000. Like if We Energies did that to you, would you not raise a stink?
I would not even come close to paying them anything.
Right?
It's like there is such, like, there are so many people and so many businesses. Chase Bank could be like, we forgot to put 2 charges on your credit card. You now owe an extra $500. Be like, that makes sense. It's fine. We Energies be like, hey, we undercharge you. Be like, from my cold, dead hand. You will never get the money ever.
Is it specifically because it's Wii Energy?
Oh, I hate them. So here's the thing I hate about Wii Energy so much is that they're like, Wii Energies, we're the number one energy provider in Southeast. Well, you are the only one. Oh, we love the arts. Yeah, that's right. You love the arts. Whatever. Leave me alone. You will never get your money.
That is the thing. Is like the energy companies that just are like, oh, no, like we're community partners. It's like, yeah, but you also have a monopoly on like the area. Like we don't have options. Yeah. It's the same thing with PG&E in California. I mean, it's the same thing, I think, I'm pretty sure, with was it Hawaiian Electric?
Yeah.
That's in so much trouble right now. Although I read this morning that weirdly their stock like rose in the last couple of days, which is, you'd think that they would be tanking right now, but that's a different story. But you know what I mean? Like that happens as far as, and so it's like, or if like your cable company, it's like, oh, sorry, we're have to back charge you because you were on this plan, but you're really supposed to be on this plan. And like you would be furious. And so is that different when it comes to paying tuition of, you told me I was in the clear, you told me my balance was zero, I have moved on 6 months out from graduation, and now you charge me $8,000? Like, and I don't know. The legal ramifications, I don't know if there's any recourse to be like, no, I'm not paying it.
I'm sure somewhere in the paperwork they signed, it covers this clearly. It says, like, you know, if there is a clerical error, that, you know, it's in the hands of the borrowee.
Probably.
That they're going to pay back the money, because God knows they'll never protect us.
We don't have lawyers to protect us. But, you know, I'm sure to a certain extent I don't know. Because I have heard about this with, like, health bills, like, with, like, medical bills. There's different hacks as far as you can, you know, when you get a bill, especially a bill that you don't understand from, like, a hospital stay, you can ask for, like, itemized receipts and challenge certain charges, like, when they try to charge you, like, $150 for a Band-Aid and stuff like that. But then you can also like get representation to help you understand the bill. And sometimes people can be like, I'm just not going to pay it. And like,
oh, I love those TikTok videos.
This thing, it's TikTok. Yeah, yeah,
how to get out of paying medical or like drastically lowered. I'm like, yes, tell me more. How do I beat this system?
The most embarrassing thing about being like like my late 30s and how much information I typically get from TikTok that I have to be like, so I saw this thing. It's like, you saw it on TikTok.
It's like back in the old days when like online dating was embarrassing. How'd you meet? At the gym. You met on Yahoo Personals, didn't you?
Three friends.
844
missed connections.
Yeah, right. 844-967-2789, 844-96 party if you want to call and be a part of the conversation. But you know who's part of the conversation right now, Kristen?
I'm gonna guess Tom from LA.
Oh my gosh, it's like you're a psychic. Tom, what you up to today?
Hey guys. First off, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that. I just wanted to bring it back to a little bit of what you're talking about, Kristen, which is private versus public. And then these private companies like what happened in Hawaii and also Edison and these other privatized companies, you know, they're about making profit. They're about their stockholders. They're about that kind of stuff. Whereas when it's public, it's we the people. And when it's public, it is all about that we do have some type of response or some type of refusal to do things because of the fact that we the people are actually in charge of things like water and power. So people out there, please do not wish for your things that are in the commons, things that we all own together. Do not push for them to want to be privatized, because if they do, then it's about the shareholders and it's no longer about the people. To answer your question, sorry, if they screwed up in Oshkosh, that's on them.
There you go.
Once you've got your bill, once you've gotten what it is, you can't go back and say, oh yeah, we forgot that you owe us this.
Oopsie doodles.
Especially if they're going to charge interest on top of it. If they want to take it and, like, I think, I forget your name, sir. But
Greg.
Chris, I'm Greg.
Greg, I'm sorry. So basically, you know, if it's something where it was their screw up, then fine. Then maybe it would be fair at the end of the loan that there's no interest on this payback, and that you know, you'd be willing to pay it.
Yeah.
But if they're going to charge interest on top of it, forget it.
Absolutely not. Yeah. All right, Tom, thank you so much as always for the call. We got to go to a break. When we come back, Dan Schaefer will be here to recombobulate. He was in the media room, so we can get some inside scoop on what the RNC debate media room looks like and other topics, including our own Supreme Court drama. Stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Drama. Stick around. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. Greg Bach is on the board, and that music means one thing. Know that we're not trapped in a maze.
We're being invaded.
Although it feels like that. We're not trapped in a corn maze in the autumn of a Wisconsin field. Dan Schaefer
Cowboy
is here.
Aliens are coming to get us.
Dan Schaefer is here because it's Tuesday, and it's time to recombobulate. How are you, Mr. Schaefer?
I'm doing well, Kristen. I hope you guys are doing well. I really enjoy, for our video, for those who are following this show via video, you guys are really getting into it with this song. Yeah, I mean, chose the song. You guys are really digging. You know, there's like movements to the reactions and the dancing that you're doing on the video here. It's I'm really enjoying
it. We have coordinated outfits today. Like we really went for it.
And I think we should start charging for the live stream
because we have so many people who watch.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's get into it. Because you, the last time I saw you, I think I was leaving Whitetail. You were walking in. I was running around crazy during the debate last week.
Yeah, I saw you for about 2.5 seconds on debate day.
Yeah,
that was about it. Yeah.
I spent most of that day with my producer hat on, waddling around 8 months pregnant, which was in the heat, which was really a special memory that I'll always hold on to.
It's a story you'll be telling for years.
But you stopped by, you said hi to everyone in the Civic Media headquarters for the day, but then you got to head over to the media room. And so between, you know, we've talked some the next day, we talked a lot about what happened, what we all watched on TV. But as far as kind of your experience, both outside of things that were happening that we didn't get to see because we were broadcasting all day, but stuff in the plaza, but then also what was the media room like?
It was quite the scene. I mean, I'd covered, you know, last year's Senate debate and a bunch of different local debates and things like that. I'd never covered anything like a presidential primary debate, and certainly nothing like that one. So that it was quite the experience being backstage. You know, they kind of had, you know, reporters from all over the world. I was sitting next to a reporter from England who was in town to cover the debate. So obviously, you know, Milwaukee in the national and international spotlight. So that was really interesting aspect of it, to see how they would put this event on. It went really well from that standpoint of it. But yeah, backstage there was the media room and the spin room, and this is all separate from the actual debate happening on stage inside Fiserv Forum. So it was kind of like in this back hallway that they had converted to a media area. And I had credentials for the media room, but not the spin room. So like where a lot of the candidates came, you know, after the debate to talk to reporters, things like that, they would come to the spin room side of it. One of the people who came to the media room side of it was Donald Trump Jr., who said he did not have credentials from Fox News to go to the spin room because his father was not a participant. So he just came and crashed the media room, and of course got a lot of attention from the reporters there, and was talking about how he, you know, his reactions to the debate and how he thought Ramaswamy was the only good candidate on stage during the debate. And yeah, it was quite the scene.
Yeah, it seems like it. And so was it, did it change how you feel like you got to cover, like, because you did, so in the recombobulation area in the last, I don't know which day, did you publish it this week, last week, end of last week?
End of last week, yeah. I published a two-part breakdown, yeah, of everything. You know, I talked about the actual debate. I talked about what was happening in Milwaukee. I talked about some weird stories of walking down Old World Third after hours and having it be really dull until Doug Burgum's camp showed up.
Him, like, hobbling along. Was he on crutches?
I don't know. He was on stage for 2 hours. He was there longer than anyone in the spin room, and then he made it out to the bars afterwards. Respect to Doug Burgum.
Well, I will say, because I feel like second to Wisconsin, North Dakota, also known for their drinking culture. So that could be why he felt he could hang in the bars for as long as he did. But as far as for your two takeaways, do you feel like getting access and being in the media room significantly changed how you covered the event versus had you not had access?
I mean, to a certain extent. I don't think it was because we were all in the media room watching the debate on the broadcast. So, like, that, I think it would have been added a little bit more to it had we been in the room seeing some of the audience reactions instead of just hearing it through the broadcast. I think that would have, you know, yeah, that, like, I was in the room for the Mandela Barnes Ron Johnson debate last year, and that was a really interesting way to see, you know, kind of people's individual reactions to the candidates and things like that. So I think that was different. I think being there, even just around, you know, and you guys were around all day too, but even being downtown, being in the Deer District before and after, and just getting the whole vibe of the experience, I think was certainly really beneficial to our coverage.
Did it make you excited for the RNC next year?
I'm not going to go with excited.
Okay, what word do you choose?
The terminology. You know, it heightened my interest for it, okay, perhaps, and just to see the whole spectacle of it, how it's going to take over downtown. Everybody's talking about this as a dress rehearsal or a test run or whatever we want to characterize for the RNC next year. And, you know, I think it's just, you've got to embrace the weirdness of it to a certain extent, too. Like, I went to the Hyatt to cover the Democratic, the DNC's press conference the day of the debate, and then I was downstairs kind of milling around in the lobby for a while, and there were, like, Trump supporters walking through with signs, and Matt Gaetz showed up at the elevator and started signing a bunch of these Trump signs and stuff like that. So it's just, like, it's going to be... It's just weird. It's just unavoidably weird.
How do you sum it up? Weird. So now Trump's nothing new and the Republicans are nothing new, but having a press person from England next to you every time, like, let's just pick on Ron DeSantis for a moment. Anything like I know someone who survived multiple abortion attempts. Did your head just sort of slowly dip down and, like, Ron, do you know we have company here? There's company here, and you are embarrassing us.
You know, I try to keep it pretty buttoned up in the media room.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm you're not professional.
Well, and I learned that more from covering a few Bucks games
as a media
credential. So, like, when you're on media row, like, as a reporter covering the Bucks or something like that, I haven't done this a lot, but I did it a few times more when I was covering just, like, the arena stuff, battle and the franchise and whatever. You can't cheer on media row, which for me as, like, a lunatic Bucks fan is not easy to do. So you just got to kind of keep it together and be professional when you're in those kinds of settings and not overreact.
And that's why I don't know if I could ever, like, because people have asked, like, are you getting media passes and stuff like that? It's like, I'm not a trained journalist. Like, I'm squarely an opinion. And so it's like, I don't, and we've already established that half the fun of watching this show versus listening to this show is watching Jane and I, like, and the faces that we make. So it's not very easy to, like, keep this buttoned up.
Hold your opinion in. Well, I quit.
Yeah, I was like, well, I don't know if I could do that. All right, well, just to wrap it up, what were some of your, and even as it has evolved since you published your takeaways, where do you think we go from here as far as watching the RNC and the primary continue now that we, especially since we know as of yesterday, Trump's DC case or DC is the first court hearing in DC is going to happen the day before Super Tuesday. So any, before we move on to the next topic, any other big, deep cuts?
Yeah, I think the one, you know, Ramaswamy was really a hot topic of the debate. I really think he's running for VP. I really think he's not running to win this primary and to become president. He was effusive in his praise of Donald Trump. He was kind of the highlight of the Sunday shows. He was on Meet the Press and stuff like that a couple days ago. And I think he is rising in the polls because he's talking about how great Trump is. And I think he's just running for VP.
He also
I don't think he's running to be famous. Yeah.
Because the thing is, I think it was a caller last week when we were talking about this after the debate, so last Thursday. Someone was like, Trump would never pick him because how would he pick someone who would take the limelight away from him?
Exactly. That was last Thursday.
Yep. And I think that's fairly accurate. Even if he likes him and he likes that he's a bootlicker, it is something to be said. It's like, think about him picking Mike Pence the first time around, who certainly is not stealing any limelight or spotlight away from anybody, despite having the nickname Bubbles, which I do love. But someone like Vivek certainly would, right, as far as being younger, richer. I mean, he's certainly more self-made, even despite, you know, what you want to say as far as like a pump and dump scheme of how he made his money. More self-made than Donald Trump is, younger. So would he really want to compete with that as like that being the sideshow to the Donald Trump show? I don't know. But I think in general, he has raised his name recognition to do a variety of things regardless of what the outcome is.
Yeah, and I think hate to give credit to Donald Trump Jr. here, but he mentioned in the media room that Ramaswamy had the type of night that Ron DeSantis needed to have.
Yeah, which is true.
It's just like, you know, the meme of the worst person you know makes a great point type of thing with Donald Trump Jr. Making that point. He was really going in on DeSantis in that moment, too. So I think that's a part of the takeaway from that is that that's the one guy that they liked on stage, that the Trump camp liked on stage.
Has there been any polls that have come out since last week? As far as where standings, I think I saw something from 538 as far as like some, they asked like the same group, which is obviously a limited amount as far as like opinions that shifted like pre versus post debate. But have you seen anything else that kind of starts to indicate like if any kind of needle was moved whatsoever?
Yeah, I think there was a couple polls that showed a slight dip for Trump himself after not attending the debate. But I think the candidate who was kind of seeing any increase was Ramaswamy. And I think that's kind of because of not just the debate, but I think of what's been happening in the last couple of weeks with him just kind of getting more attention. And now that the spotlight is more on him, that it's going to be interesting to see how he handles that. I saw a clip poll that was going around Twitter yesterday of him asking a question in the 2004 Democratic primary at like a town hall. So maybe people are going to like dig up all these different things about Ramaswamy that are interesting. So who knows?
I feel like I need to go see, because you know that he used to be a rapper, right?
What?
I saw the Eminem thing.
Right. God. You talked
Greg,
about
how
that.
Did you forget about this?
There's a lot of things I try to push out of my brain, and Vivek Ramaswamy.
I want to be like when he was at Harvard, he was he went by Devek the rapper. And so I feel like, and he's published those videos, so it's not like there's any like uncovering that has to happen, but I feel like he's like ripe for some like remixes. And so it's like let the internet just do their thing as far as some of these old vintage videos of Devek rapping that could be as entertaining as Ron DeSantis being a deep fake to Michael Scott, wearing a woman's suit.
One of the worst things you could hear someone say, oh man, I used to rap a lot when I was younger. Even worse than that, when I was at Harvard, I used to rap. just kill me in the face.
My commentary on him is that he reminded me of the most annoying guy at the Model UN convention.
Yeah.
He tried to be every UN country.
I was a Model UN dork in high school, so he reminded me a lot of brought a lot of that energy.
I was in debate club for a little while, and certainly I knew that guy.
Yeah, we all know that guy.
That was like, oh, you're doing this because you really love debate. I'm doing this so I can like get into college. All right, well, Dan Schaefer will still be here when we get back. If you have any questions for him, feel free to text them in at 844-967-2789. I want to get your opinion when we come back on what actually could happen if Voss makes good on this impeachment threat of Protasiewicz. Because I was reading yesterday, like, if anything, it could slow the whole thing down, which would also be bad. So we'll talk about that when we come back. And also, I'm going to get your opinion on that that Giannis interview. I'm sure you have thoughts.
Sure.
All right.
Yeah, we'll get into it.
Dan Schaefer is here to recombobulate with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Stick around. Wisconsin. I'm Kristen Bry, along with Greg Bach on the board, and we are talking to Dan Schaefer, as we do every Tuesday at from 10:30 to 11, getting his thoughts on national, state, Milwaukee politics, news in general. And I've been wanting, it's interesting, I would love to, because we talked a little bit last time about online versus, I guess, offline interest in certain stories, right? And like the very online voters versus people who are lower news consumers and what the things that they care about. And I've thought about this a lot as far as how much drama there has been in the last month with the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And it really hasn't even been a month, right? Because it was August 1st that Protasiewicz got sworn in, and we're only on the 29th.
And 1 month in Wisconsin politics is like a year in normal states, political time.
But there's been drama as far as the court's director. There's drama as far as are they going to, if she doesn't recuse herself, is she going to be impeached? Like, there's all this stuff swirling. And I'm always like, how much do people besides political nerds care about this? But since you and I are political nerds, we're going to talk about it. and people can either tune out or keep listening. So as of right now, there are serious threats from Voss and the Republicans saying that if Protasiewicz does not recuse herself on the redistricting case, they will potentially impeach her. How seriously do you think that threat is, should be taken?
I think we need to take those types of things seriously.
Okay.
Because Robin Voss, we know his MO, we know it's power consolidation at all costs, and we know this would, and we know that the maps are Republicans' skeleton key to keeping power.
Totally.
No matter how many statewide elections that they lose. So I think in interest of preserving that power, Robin Voss will use any lever available to him. There was a really good piece on this issue, or just kind of what's been happening at the Wisconsin Supreme Court in the Washington Post this weekend. Patrick Marley, former Journal Sentinel reporter, wrote a long piece on this for the Washington Post. And he kind of laid out a couple different options for how this could move forward. And one seemed like, oh, that's the Voss thing to do. And so that would be...
I would have guessed which one in my head. But okay. Go ahead. Do you have any guess now?
Go ahead. Yeah,
I think it's the one where they just delay. So, like, because what happens is, since to impeach someone, they need a simple majority in the House, and they need a supermajority in the Senate, so they have that. So if the House votes to impeach her and the Senate does not vote, then it's just this limbo. Is that the one that you were going to say?
That's exactly what I was going to say. We both have watched Robin Voss operate as the Assembly Speaker long enough to know that this is the type of move he's going to make. So what they can do, like you laid out there, is that the Assembly can vote and a majority vote to get rid of the Supreme Court justice, mm-hmm. in this case, I guess it would be Protasiewicz. So they can vote, make that vote, but the Senate would have to confirm. And so we saw a number of times in Evers' first term when Evers would appoint House Secretary, Agriculture Secretary, whatever it might be, a member of his cabinet, and the Senate would just never confirm that person. And so they would just leave that appointment out there. The person would be doing the job, but then they would have that threat of removing that person kind of whenever they wanted. And they used that against Brad Paff as the agriculture secretary very early in Evers' first term. I don't think they ever even confirmed a health secretary throughout the course of the pandemic, but they were always threatening to fire her. So I think that's the type of thing that they could do that would delay a redistricting case so that they wouldn't be able to get new maps in place for the 2024 election.
And the thing that's also interesting to note is that, you know, it was always a fast, I mean, I always thought it was a 2024 election. By the getting new maps by the 2024 election seemed really fast. If we could do it, great. But the thing that's interesting is that if it were to happen by the 2026 election, there's two Supreme Court races between now and the fall of 2026. So we potentially mm-hmm. get to do what we just did in April mm-hmm. or like in the spring, two more times before we would actually get new maps, which is daunting. Is that the word that I'm looking for? Exhausting?
Not great. It's not great. But I think, no, I'm a little bit more optimistic than you are about getting new maps for 2024.
Okay.
To be perfectly honest. I think it is a realistic possibility that this case moves forward and we do have new maps for 2024. I think it's a realistic possibility. I do.
No, I think it's realistic. I just think it's also realistic that they find any way possible to drag their feet and delay it from happening.
No doubt. No doubt. Shenanigans. Always shenanigans.
Always shenanigans. We have a text coming in from the 414. Voss didn't have a problem with the Senate waiting 20 months to vote in the DNR. Walker voted a law in 2015. From the 414.
What is that?
It's just the text that came through.
Anyways, all right. Well, so we'll keep track of that. But before we let you go, Giannis had maybe not what people wanted to hear in an interview. Was that mid last week? As far mm-hmm. as him saying that he wants to be in a team that's making the same kind of sacrifice that he's making to be able to bring home another championship. If that's a accurate or fair way to summarize what he said. Thoughts as a fanatic fan?
I'm not worried about it.
Okay.
I'm not worried about it. Giannis is very loyal to the Bucks, but he wants to keep pressure on the team to make sure that they're competitive all the time. He doesn't want to be in a situation where they're rebuilding or anything like that. So I think what he said had less to do with, oh, I'm going to leave or something like that, but more of just a reminder to, you know, a new owner as part of the Bucks ownership group. The Lazarys are no longer part of this. Mm-hmm. As a reminder to the general manager, to the coach, to the fan base, that, like, you need to be competitive as I am. We have to meet my level of competitive insanity. And so I'm not worried about the comments. I think this is a normal type of thing that he'll do from time to time, where he'll just kind of, like, get out there and remind people, like, I could go. I'm probably not going to, but I could. So we need to keep the foot on the gas here. And so I think that's ultimately what he's trying to do.
That's fair. And then there's just viral videos of Jokic partying in Serbia. Have you seen that?
Yeah, he's the best.
He's the best.
I'm happy
just
for Jokic.
Doesn't care. All right, Dan Schaefer, as always, so fun to have you here. We'll have you here next Tuesday to do it again. And have a great week.
You too.
All right. See you later. All right. We're taking a break for the top of the hour news. When we come back, we are going to be talking to Barbara Van Haren, who's an educational consultant with the Department of Public Instruction, to talk about a new special education program to try to retain more teachers. Stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin. New special education.